Hello, everyone. I am Manny.
And I'm Wyo. Welcome back to the Kink Buffet Podcast. This is episode 14 of season 3.
And we have guests on our show, and we're really excited about this because they have been doing, it wouldn't be fair to them to say they're doing what we're doing because they're so far ahead, but they're doing what we would like to be doing. Is that better?
Yeah.
Better way of putting it? They are kink educators, poly educators, relationship coaches, authors, seminar runners. They have been actively involved in sharing their knowledge of these different worlds with a pretty big audience.
Right, and they've just released a new book about polyamory dating, which definitely piqued our interest. And when they reached out to us on Twitter, it was like, hey, for sure, we'd love to have that.
And they also let us be on their show, which is going to get us far more press for ours than they get just than they're going to get for theirs, just because their audience is so much bigger. So it's really nice when people, they set aside egos, they set aside, you know, pissing competitions. Well, no, they embrace other people in the community and want to help everyone grow. So they gifted us this one, but when we get big and famous, we'll be doing the same for other new people too, right?
Which is supposed to happen any day now, right?
We passed episode 50. We're going to be rich, I think, by Thursday.
Yeah.
So anyways, welcome to the show, Dawn and Dan.
So thank you for joining us, Dan and Dawn.
Hi.
Howdy, howdy.
So the first thing before we talk about dating in the polyamory world, we want to thank you because we are doing a podcast exchange. We appeared on your show and you appeared on ours, or are appearing on ours. However, you're established. You've been doing this for years. You have 500 plus episodes. We reap far more benefit from this exchange than you do. You're actually just being generous to us to give us this platform. So we recognize that and appreciate it.
Well, it's very kind of you.
It's a lot of fun.
It's just plain fun. And we go by the idea that the more water, you know, water raises all the ships. So if you guys get a benefit out of it, if we get a benefit out of it, the listeners are the ones that really get a benefit from it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we couldn't agree more. We actually had this discussion just recently about how we're already this small outcast community. And then within our community, it subdivides into sub-communities. You know, we're not DS, we're leather, we're not DS, we're Gorian. We're not just Gorian, we're old school Gorian, you're new school Gorian. And we're like, guys, we're already like, we're already small.
Right. And especially in these times with the pandemic, like feeling separated and isolated is already such a thing. Like, we just appreciate when we can have time to talk to other kinksters and feel like we're still part of the collective and connected to people. So yeah,
absolutely.
Oh, fantastic.
Absolutely. Yep.
So, all right. So we wanted to talk to you about dating in the polyamory world, which is, I'm happy we're making this topic a little more specific because the topic of polyamory can't be covered in any, you know, in sound bites, but this is specifically about dating. And
yeah, please go ahead.
No, so you had just written a book about it. We had talked about this. We have a tendency to talk over one another. We don't have, we're not in person. We can't use the talking pen to hand back and forth.
Yeah. Exactly, right. And nothing worse than getting a room full of podcasters together and getting one to shut up.
Right, right. And extroverts and exhibitionists, you know.
Have you been in a situation with a room full of dongs and it becomes a...
The pissing match.
Pissing match.
I am the domliest man in this room. And the woman comes in.
So why don't we start with about your book, and then we'll talk about what the book's about.
So the background on how we came about this is, for me, Dawn and I identify as polyamorous. We've been polyamorous for the 20 years that we've been together. And I keep seeing posts on the different polyamory sites that I'm on saying how hard it is to find people and how hard it is to connect with other people. But the one that's the weirdest to me is when male-bodied people say, well, it's so easy for women. And I look at the relationship Dawn and I have, and I say, you know what? I don't understand what they're talking about. I have, and I don't mean this to be immodest or anything crazy like that, but the reality is I have, the calendar is my problem, not finding people to date. I have way too many people to date. I don't have time for that. Dawn, on the other hand, has a terrible time finding people to date. And we stepped back and we looked at that and we said, well, what is that about? Is it because you're female and I'm male? Is it because of our age? Is it because of our this or that and this
our
other
roles
thing?
Or,
right.
Yeah, or what, you know, things like that.
And we said, you know what? It's got nothing to do with that. It's just a matter of dating is a skill, and polyamorous dating, like you're saying at the beginning of the show, right? Dating is its own set of skills, but then you chop yourself down to the smaller pool of people, polyamory people.
And some people think getting into polyamory that the pool gets bigger. And like Dan just said, it doesn't. It actually shrinks. So, you know, that there's less people to swim around with.
And what many people don't realize is there are polyamory specific apps, polyamory specific dating sites that you can go to meet people.
Polyamorous events, polyamorous support groups. There, all that's out there.
Yeah, and the events are a great example. All of the events that we've been to and that we've hosted, part of it is, and a lot of the events that the polyamory events are not intended as hookups to meet people, but there's an aspect of it, right? So when people ask, where do I go meet people? Well, there's this big long list of polyamory events, but also a lot of people that we've met, they've met other people not at polyamory events, but through other means. And we talk about that as well. So that all we took all that stuff and we said, you know what? People keep asking us the same questions about this. Why don't we write it down? And once you start writing it down, at least for us, it became a book, and it became something that we enjoy being able to share with people, and just some really simple tips and tricks, as well as getting a whole, you know, the number of times I've seen people post on whether it's the polyamory dating site that Reddit has or Facebook or any of the other ones saying, hey, I'm Joe, I'm a polyamorous guy, I'm looking to meet some people. Well, you know what, Joe? There's 1,000 posts saying that. How are you going to stand out? What is your opening? And we developed the whole concept. How are you going to build an opening that not only is going to stand out from the other hundreds of people out there, but also that will give someone the opportunity and the desire to engage, right? When I post, you know, hey, I'm Joe. I want, you know, I'm looking forward to meeting you. Well, so what, Joe? But if I posted, just for an example, my opening, I talk about how much I love strange food, right? So if you like strange food, you want to, what the hell is strange food? What do you mean by that? Or there's all kinds of directions you can go with that. Things like that.
So, and then we do it with our classic style of Dan says, Dawn says. So Dan will talk about his experience with different things. And then I'll talk about my experience on the same topic. And we did that with our other two books, and we're doing it with this one. And because my experience is so different, and I will talk to other women. And actually, I have one friend on Facebook that is always throwing out there, oh, here we go again. And she'll talk about, you know, the people that reach out to her and how it's a naughty pictures right off the bat. I don't know what words I'm allowed to say here. So it's naughty pictures right off the bat. Or they'll ask her what is her favorite sex position, or, you know, things like that. So I talk about that of like, hey, guys, back off. You know, try to get to know us as people first. Some of us are slow burners. That's mine and Dan's different. Dan is hay. You put a flame to him and he ignites instantly. I'm water. It takes me a little while. I'm a slow boil. So it takes me a little while to get to know you and to figure out if this is something I really want to do. I don't jump into relationships. I wish I could, but I don't. So, you know, accepting who you are and working with it. So we talk about dating as an introvert, right? So that's what I had to learn how to do. And dating, I never had to date before Dan. So this is my second marriage, and I never dated before Dan. My cousin set me up with my high school boyfriend of 2 years. Dan's first ex-wife actually set me up with my first husband. And then Dan and I have been friends since high school, and we just kind of fell into a relationship after our other marriages had broken up. So I didn't learn how to date until I was already married for the second time, and he had to help me teach me how to do it. So all those hints are in there as well.
Yeah, so finding the right places to look for people is a great suggestion of a place to start. Like, when you look at dating, it's basically a sales tactic, and you have to know where your audience is. If you're putting it out there, there's a lot of people, but they're not going to want to buy what you're selling.
Exactly.
What's your take on, like, when should this come up? Is this like, well, obviously they're on a poly dating site, so they might know what it is, but do you lay out the whole dynamic right away? Do you just inch into it and let each dynamic develop on its own? How do you handle that?
For me, because I'm in a power exchange relationship as well, I will usually talk about that right near the beginning so that they can know what to expect, right? So because some people do poly, they date separately, some people date together, some people, you know, there's all kinds of ways you can do this as poly. So I will let them know that I'm married, you know, that I'm in a committed relationship. And then very soon on, I will let them know that I'm also in a power exchange relationship. So now if I meet people that are outside of the poly world or the kink world, then I kind of just slip in there. I'll talk about my husband for a little bit, and then I'll talk about the boyfriend for a little bit and let them put two and two together and see if they have questions.
Yeah, we have some very specific tactics of how we go after situations where if it's not a polyamorous person, or I don't know if they're a polyamorous person. For example, one of the things I do if I'm going to get to the point where I want to exchange nobody exchanges phone numbers anymore, right? I exchange email addresses. If I'm going to exchange an email address with somebody and I don't know if they're polyamorous or not, I give them this card that Dawn and I developed. It has my picture on it. It has Dawn's picture on it. It has my email address. It has Dawn's email address on it as well, right? So I could say, look, I'm not cheating on anybody. I'm not trying to be unethical about my monogamy. I'm not monogamous. And if you have any questions about it, here's contact information for one of my partners. You know, kind of making that very clear. The other aspects of recognizing, and here we come into this consent world where a lot of non-polyamorous people, they need to know that you're polyamorous right off the bat so they can make a decision whether they want to move forward and engage or not, right? Many monogamous people, as soon as you explain what polyamory is, they're like, okay, I'm out. I'm not even interested. And that's perfectly fine. But the flip side is, don't be afraid of if somebody, you don't know if they're polyamorous or if they're monogamous. There's ways that you can approach that in an ethical way as well and say, I appreciate that you're monogamous. I'm polyamorous. Do you want to chat? Would you like to have a conversation?
I like setting that expectation up front because a lot of monogamous people and some poly people, but mostly monogamous, are on that relationship escalator. So if they start dating you, you know, some have it in their mind that will lead to marriage one day, you know, instead of just being okay with where things are. And so I do like to tell them up front that I'm poly and that this is only going to go so far, as far as we know.
So
as far as we know.
Yeah. This is a very specific question about that's come up with both of us, probably you guys, I'm sure. What do you do when you tell someone that you're polyamorous, you're in a DS relationship, you have someone that you're not leaving for them, you're not going to get married. They're aware of all that. And they say to you, I'm comfortable with that. I still want to see you. However, even though they're grown-up adults making grown-up decisions, you believe in your heart that that person is going to get hurt. Like, you just say, I don't think you can handle it, even though you think you can. Does that prevent you from seeing them? Do you feel responsible to not take them down that path if you feel they're vulnerable?
Yeah, I have made that decision to not go down that path And I regret that decision on most of the time because I'm making a decision for somebody else who, like you said, is a grown adult. Instead, what I found is I flip it around to, oh, that's fantastic that we're going to give this a try. Why don't we meet at my house and then we'll go off on a date? And the first thing that I do is let them see the interaction that I have with my existing partner or partners, right? Not throwing it in their face, not trying, but just letting them know this is real. This is totally who I am. One of the things that I found, one of the partners I have now, who I've been with for 6 years, she said one of the most attractive things about me is how much I love Dawn. And seeing that made her feel very comfortable, made her feel like she knew exactly who I was. And that's what I want. If I'm going to date somebody who I'm not 100% sure is down to polyamory, regardless of what they're saying, I just let them see what polyamory looks like for me, right? Come to my house, see what my day-to-day life looks like. Again, I'm not trying to bring them into the house in some kind of weird way. I'm just saying, here's my reality. This is what you're signing up for. And if you tell me, as a consenting adult, you want to keep marching forward, let's march forward. I will trust you in your decision-making.
And then we communicate a lot and we bring it to the table. And we actually had one person that we dated early on that we told her, you know, we can see that this is probably going to turn into something akin to love, right? It's going to turn into something that will be a loving relationship. It's poly. It's allowed to be that. But we're afraid you're going to get hurt with this because you don't understand it. So instead of using the word love, let's use the word bond. And that kind of kept her from having too many relationship escalator expectations. And it actually worked for her until we were able to use the word love and it just be what it was.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some tricks around that. So, but communication is the main one.
Have you found that there, over time, you've been doing this a while, have you found that people, especially people who are older, have become more receptive to this idea over the past 20 years?
Yeah, 20 years ago, there wasn't even a word right. for this. And but you also had the hippie times of free love.
Right. Yeah, right? We definitely know a polyamorous person who's in his 70s and he says, I've always been polyamorous. You guys just didn't know we were around. You know, the time of communes and all that kind of stuff. The really weird thing to me isn't necessarily how it's been accepted by the older generation, but by the younger generation. That same girlfriend I mentioned, she has a 15-year-old that understands polyamory. They talk about polyamory at high school, right? People have seen the TV shows about polyamory, all that kind of, you know, now, and it used to just be, at first, it was just the, you know, Geraldo, whatever
Geraldo,
his name was, you know, with the, oh my God, I can't believe this crazy
Jerry
lifestyle.
Springer,
right. And now it's like just, it's kind of, it's not mainstream, but it's certainly something you see more and more often. Kids know what it is. And it's really weird to me in a way to see. And this is just because I'm an old guy, but you see on the poly boards, hey, I'm 18 and I've always known I've been polyamorous ever since I've started dating 2 years ago. And I was like, that's just so, it's just strange to me, right? Because I was 35 before I even knew it was an option. I was raised in a time where it's like, nope, monogamy is the only option you have. Oh, by the way, here's how you cheat on your spouse, because we do a lot of TV about that.
See, and in high school, I was poly, like I said, that was before poly word was even created. And because I was in such a monogamous society, my friends actually convinced me that I was supposed to be jealous of my boyfriend dating somebody else, even though me and the boyfriend had agreed upon it, right? So, you know, so I was actually trained out of poly into monogamy, and then it never felt right. So I found a relationship and a partner that I could do this with. So, you know, it's really kind of odd.
Yeah, I had a similar experience. I grew up with the ideas that everybody that I played with was my partner. They were my friend that I did sexy stuff with. It wasn't like there was no reason for me to have ownership over their time when they weren't with me and those kind of things. And then as I got older, the societal pressure became, you know, you're supposed to grow up now and have a
settle down,
get your house in the suburbs and your 2.5 children. And so I went ahead with, you know, going down that path, and the further down I went, it was miserable for me. And so now, having come back out to, you know, more of what I was like before, I've then been able to find the fulfillment in my lifestyle and the people that I'm in relationship with.
And I have the exact opposite of experience, which leads to the next question I have to ask you, because I think serial monogamous. Well, we did some swinging when I was younger, but like for the most part, monogamy my entire life until the last, you know, few years. It hasn't been that long. And I transitioned into this from a monogamous, we're getting married relationship to a moved into a polyamorous relationship, and it was the most horrific experience of my life. Mm-hmm. It was absolutely horrible. And from that moment on, it's been fine. When it's been, that's where we started, perfect. Everything's been hunky-dory, but going from one to the other was hard, and it centered around the dating. It wasn't talking about poly that was difficult. It was, my partner's going out with someone tonight, huh? Do you talk about that in the book as well, as far as dating from a monogamous new exploration too?
I'm sure it slips in there the way I talk about things sometimes, but not specifically going from monogamous to poly. So yeah, even being poly and knowing that's who I was and really wanting that utopia of this and knowing we had enough, an extra love to give to people and stuff like that, it was still very challenging for me at the beginning. So I still suffered from jealousy. I still suffered from not feeling enough. I still suffered from all of that. And I absolutely talk about that in our other book, The Polyamory Toolkit.
Yeah, so. I was going to say the same. I think we focus more on, in the Polyamory Toolkit, we spend a lot of time talking about jealousy and talking about dealing with how to deal with one partner is off on a date, and you're home alone, and what's that like, and how to deal with that, and how to not feel alone. The only aspects of this that we talk about related to that in the Polyamory Dating Guide is dating for existing couples, right?
Right.
And we see this a lot on this is another big, right? If you're on a polyamory dating site or any polyamory board, this is the other common one you see is me and I'm a male-bodied person and here's my female-bodied person and we're looking for that third person to complete us, right? Yeah. And half the people out there say, wow, well, I'm in the same boat. I can't find anybody. The other half the people have their pitchforks out calling Unicorn Hunter and suggesting nice things about them. And I thought it was important for us, Dawn and I date separately. We have some experience dating as a couple as well. But we needed to approach that and talk about that and talk about if you are dating as a couple, therefore, are you always an evil unicorn hunter and an unethical human? Or is there a way that you can successfully, ethically date as a couple? And we believe that it's an and, not an or. Right? There are couples out there that do things in a way that hurt people. And that's why unicorn hunters get a bad rap. And there is a skill to being, and we know unicorns too. We know thirds out there, people that want to join an existing couple, right? So both ends are true. So we talk a lot about how you can be, if you're an existing couple, you've decided to date as a couple, great. We're not going to judge you for that, but we are going to talk about how can you do that ethically? How can you do that in an appropriate way that everybody's feelings and everybody is cherished and everybody is considered an equal part of that and that nobody gets hurt going through that, right?
To the best of, yes. Right.
Yeah, it's a bit, you know, all plans, you know, at some point. So that's, you know, really important aspect of recognizing that, you know, everything that we talk about, right? There is no, all of this is bad and all of this is good, right? It's people being ethical and loving. And, you know, why are you out there dating? Why do you want to date? You know, if it's just for sex, great. If you're going to call yourself polyamorous and you're just for sex, okay. It's a little confusing to us, but that's cool. But be that person. If your desire is just sex, then, you know, don't try and say it's something other than that. But if it is something other than that, how can you convey that to people?
Yeah, I've been on the side where, you know, I was openly dating couples, and the idea that you have to fit their mold is, I think, the part that's the most repulsive of that. It's like, I don't get mm-hmm. to be a person. I don't get to be me. I get to be your fantasy. And there is no room for me unless I fit that. And I think that is what is the main contention with, like, you're not really polyamorous. You're a fantasy fulfillment machine. And
right. And that's what a lot of people don't realize, is that if you're dating as a couple, you and your partner have sat down and said, okay, here's what we want this to look like. Here's our little box. And now you're saying, all right, I want somebody to fit in this box. And it's like, wait a minute, where's my chance to speak up with my needs, wants, and desires, right? Where's my opportunity to negotiate? If you want to be part of a triad, you don't want to be part of, you don't want to be this, like you were saying, right? You don't want to just be a fantasy fulfillment person. So we had, we looked at that, and we actually had somebody who is a self-described unicorn have a little guest chapter in the book, because we're not unicorns, right? I'd love to be somebody's unicorn, but
I fully enjoy
what
you're saying with the if you're only in it for the sex, then, you know, say that. There's people that want that, and I've done the fantasy fulfillment thing. It's really a lot of fun, as long as that part of the negotiation is clear and it's not a whole like, oh, you're going to move in with us and be an equal triad and all of this, you know, mystical thing. And then that's not really what's happening.
No, you nailed that. I mean, you've been on both sides, which is a different perspective. Well, the thing that I was observing is that most people, whether they're kink educators or poly or, you know, I assume they're swinging educators, but there's always this consensus that there isn't a right or wrong way to do things. Everybody has to find what works for them. But at the same time, outside of the educational side, within the community, it really, a lot of people find that their way of doing things is right and you're immoral or not as good as if you do it the other way. And so I was just, it's funny that we're talking about all these things are okay as long as it's honest and feelings are protected and all the things that should happen in any relationship.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It sounds like, honestly, that both of your books should almost come together. I mean, they're two sides of the same coin, but they're covering different topics, but there should be some overlap from one book into the other and vice versa.
Oh, absolutely. And there's actually a little side book that we've just kind of released for an ebook for some on flirting, right? In which you might be great at dating, and then you finally meet people and you get to, and you engage with people, and now you're sitting across, you know, but if you don't know how to flirt, that can be challenging.
So we did write the flirting book geared more towards the kink crowd, but there's still great stuff in there for everybody.
Kink flirting? I thought kink flirting. Yes. Like saying on your profile, I'm into this weird thing that my family doesn't need to know about.
That is a great aspect of it. Absolutely. Okay.
So I know we have limited time with you. And so we just have only a couple minutes left. Tell us, our audience, where they can find you. Tell us about the books. You also do some seminars where they can get links. So just take a minute and talk about you.
Well, thank you. That's very kind of you. For the Polyamory Dating Guide, keep it simple. Just head over to polyamorydatingguide.com and you'll find links to it there. Of course, it's going to be available on Amazon and all that kind of stuff. Get it on your e-reader or order it directly from us if you like, if you want a signed copy, or you just, and actually, right, that's how, that's really the best way to support authors if that's what you're into. Kindle likes their cut of the action. So when you order it directly from us, it does a little better for us, but we don't really care that much. Everything else we do, the Erotic Awakening podcast, the presentations that we do, the live podcast, et cetera, you can find all of that over at eroticawakening.com.
Well, fantastic. Well, thank you guys. We're looking forward to talking again. We will let you click off. We're going to continue our show. And then after the show,
All right.
Message you. But thank you so much for your time. Again, you are giving us more than we're giving you with this exchange. So we know and appreciate that.
Hey, our pleasure. Anything we can do to help you guys along, either personally or along with the podcast, please let us know.
All right, thank you so much.
That was awesome.
Yeah, I just really love it when we get to talk to other people that speak our same language. You know, it's like the words might be different, but the actual knowledge and the knowing of how these intricacies work, it's just not something that you can talk to somebody off the street, you know, and get the same level of connection from.
No, you can't. And one thing I like is we came upon most of our dynamic independently.
Mm-hmm.
We sat down and just figured out with a clear head what's going to work for us, tried to dispose of as many preconceived ideas, things we'd read, things we'd heard, and just really started from scratch.
Mm-hmm.
And came up with a game plan and an approach we felt was best for us. And here's this couple that's been doing this successfully for 20 years, very similar.
Yeah. I think when you're first getting into this realm of polyamory or maybe even kink, like you just feel like you're the only one that's ever had this struggle, like with jealousy or whatever the thing is. And having voices like Dan and Dawn in the community, like they've been there. And I mean, hopefully when we grow up, we'll be those people.
Well,
so we can be the, you know, like the example of there is light at the end of the tunnel. Yeah, it's really hard right now figuring out what you want and how to make that happen. But, you know, there's success. It's possible.
And we've spoken to them on video, live video, and we can watch and state firsthand. We see how they feel about each other. It is obvious.
Yeah.
They are not going through the motions. This is a very successful couple.
And, yeah, and they, I don't even know like that measure of when there are people, just traditional couples that you meet and they've been in relationship for like 20 years. They're definitely the minority of people that have that level of
chemistry
still at that stage of their relationship. Like, I know I didn't have it in my longer term relationship. So I just admire that so much.
It is. I thought about this, which is one of the things that one of my agendas for doing our podcast. And now we're looking for sex educators that would want to talk to a power exchange couple for their university class, for the class session about BDSM or power exchange. And the thing that I think we can bring to the table the most for me is that we don't look like what the students in the class expect us to look like.
Yeah.
They're not going to see anything that resembles abusive, not intelligent,
mm-hmm.
not having wisdom and introspection.
Yeah.
And it really, I like shaking people's
expectations.
Yeah. I think that's fun. And that's something that they do. If you meet them in public, you're going to say, oh, that's just a nice, happy couple. And then you find out they're into this stuff. You go, it'll have to challenge your preconceived ideas about this world if you had any.
Right. Well, we've had people tell us that. Definitely some of the people that have interviewed us that were newer to this on other podcasts, that the first idea that, oh, they're, you know, like master and slave, like that puts up walls. And then, you know, once you get to know us, that it's just, hey, they're pretty well-adjusted people and they might not be as weird as I thought originally.
Well, no, weird, but not bad weird.
Yeah.
So they are talking about, it's about the book that they put out about mm-hmm. dating in the poly world and how to successfully date. We do that on daily. I mean, we're monogamous because of COVID, but we're still meeting people and making connections.
Mm-hmm.
What are the dating apps that you use? And I already know the answers, but where are you meeting people?
I tend to
be more on like the Facebook dating, or I have a couple of apps that are for couples. That's more what I look for. Having been on the unicorn hunted side, I don't try to get out there very much on apps where it's not immediately obvious that there's more than one person on the other side, because I've had that pulled on me.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there's one that's called, I think it's just called Couples Dating. It's on Android. That's what I use the most.
And I'm mostly on
more mainstream apps.
Mm-hmm. Tinder and Bumble primarily. And I have no problem meeting women and sharing about my situation. And I'm shocked by how many of them are either okay with it or aren't put off by it to the point where they want to know more about it.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, that's how this podcast kind of started, was how many times we were having conversations about this world to people I was meeting on dating apps.
Right, and the same
conversation
over and over. Well, the problem that I have on mainstream apps is that as a bisexual woman, you put on there that you're interested in men or you're interested in women. Some of them have the option for both, but the audience that is on those apps is usually more one or the other. So like, I'll still get a ton of guys, and I am interested in dating men as well, but you know, it's more of the kink dating that I'm interested in. So it's not just like a vanilla hookup, which tends to be more of the driver for mainstream apps.
As soon as you put bisexual woman too, you're going to attract all these guys, right, that want to have threesomes, and you'll attract the guys that, oh, I can't tell my wife that I talked to you, but she's really interested. So you kind of have to seduce her, but don't tell her that we talked. But if you do, she's into it because she expressed,
mm-hmm,
you know, she watched lesbian porn and got turned on. So therefore, she's going to want to open up her bedroom. And you're like, dude, yeah, back.
I'm not into trying to talk your wife into anything.
but as soon as you advertise bisexual woman, you're right, going to attract that.
Yeah, so that's why I tend to shy away from those. And also, from the other side, if I put that I'm only interested in women, then I'm getting, you know, lesbian only contacts. And I mean, I don't mind that, but that's still a minority of what I'm looking for. Like, I'm not looking to just have, even though that's not off the table, to, you know, like whatever relationships I have are going to be part of, you know, you're going to know who they are and stuff like that, just because of the way that we operate, not because there's a rule about it.
And,
so,
right. And what's funny is that because we date women together, there's that term unicorn hunter in the swingers community, which can be so creepy,
mm-hmm,
that certainly doesn't apply to how we live our life. I mean, we have really good relationships with women, and whether I'm seeing them separately or you can, or we see them together, it's,
mm-hmm,
we don't have a box for them to fill. But because my relationship with you is so good, if I'm seeing a woman who's also clicks with you, anywhere from you are hot for each other to you enjoy the friendship and you both like sex, so that works out,
mm-hmm,
the dynamic can work. And it doesn't have to be, well, it's not going to be sex only. We're not swingers. We're not interested in just another hole.
Right.
So we are interested in some type of relationship, but it doesn't have to be a triple, triad, equal dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
It just has to, we all have to get along. If we don't, then two of us are dating, or one of us is dating that person.
Right.
So we do this, but we're not seeking that.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, that's,
well, it's when it's not even an option, that's a barrier. So if a lesbian was to message me and they're only interested in me, that kind of puts me in a place where that's that's a barrier, because obviously you're going to be with me too. So I don't know how to juggle that exactly.
So let's clarify for the audience. Mm-hmm. The only reason I would be with you too right now is because of COVID. Mm-hmm. Because of COVID, we are open to the possibility of a woman possibly spending time with us and even joining us in our travels. Because of COVID, it would be this low-risk situation where we all get tested, and then there's this commitment. She would effectively be quarantining with us. A lot of work that we wouldn't do for one evening with somebody passing through town. Mm-hmm. It would have to be, because of COVID, a relationship situation, which would be a woman who's interested in both of us. Right. If we were stationary and COVID was a thing of the past and you wanted to date a woman, it absolutely doesn't require me to be part of the picture.
Right. Well, and by the nature of us being people who move around a lot, like, it just doesn't lend itself to individual. I'm going to go run off and be with my girlfriend for the weekend, right, and you know.
It can happen. There's no rules. We don't have rules against that happening, mm-hmm, after COVID. Let's just call this rest of this podcast, this is post-COVID. The rules are obviously different now, but yeah, there's no rule against that. If we're traveling and you meet, well, look at finding, you know, a rope top that you want to work with, mm-hmm, that could involve, and this would be someone, it could be male or female, but if it was someone male, that could involve me being there watching the rope work, but it also could be the two of you alone, mm-hmm, perfectly acceptable with our dynamic.
Right.
But you're right, because of the situation, we're more geared towards somebody quarantining with us, which would be a specific situation. It's the challenges. I think some people think it is easier being polyamorous because of less rules and restrictions. And in some ways it is. And then in other ways,
it's the execution that
is possibly hard.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. So one thing I noticed I didn't bring up when we were interviewing them,
mm-hmm,
is that when Dan was talking about the relationships they would have with people and the dating, the thing that struck me that was so interesting, mm-hmm, is that if you took the word poly out of the equation, every single thing they talked about simply applies to dating.
Right. Yeah.
And I think this is a confusion people have, is that polyamory is not a description of character. You're polyamorous, so you're this type of person.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you are a type of person in a way, but more than that, it is a style of dating and a style of relationships that works for you. But then those individual dating scenarios we're still just two people with feelings and dreams and goals and hobbies and libidos, right? I mean, it's just, it's the same relationships that mainstream people have. It's just more of them and then balancing them. I mean, would you, I'm not stating this, I'm asking you, would you agree?
Yeah, well, I think the types of communication standards that we have and negotiating things that people don't normally talk about, all of those things that come from kink and polyamory, like, those worlds have established these standards because of the inherent risks in what we do. But yeah, they can totally apply to non-kinky people
Well, could you imagine the polyamorous person saying, well, you know, the difference between polyamory and monogamy is we think honesty is important.
Right.
Or we think respecting your partner is important. Or we think being polite mm-hmm, I can't think of a single thing that you would say is important that the monogamous person doesn't say, yeah, we do too. Yeah. But there's more on the line. And I think that the emphasis it becomes more critical. I mean, I know married couples where they're not all that honest with each other and they're they're going to trudge through life. They're going to be together forever. They're just fine. They just lie to each other sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Poly couples don't really have that flexibility.
Right.
Like, well, that is a landmine. Okay. So we have to be better than, or better in our, not better than as people, better, we need to better execute
those skills,
mm-hmm. because there's more risk.
Right. And the point of contention is that when you're working with multiple people, multiple schedules, multiple personality dynamics, like the potential for those things, like you can learn how your spouse likes their coffee and pretty much do it every day without thinking. But when you're working with like, oh, I just brought you, you know, Dan's coffee. Whoops. You know, he likes creamer. You don't. Sorry, Manny. Yeah. You know,
why were you thinking of him while making coffee?
Dan while you were making coffee? Oh, you know, like that can come off the rails really easy. So having, you know, just that whole different level of standard is self-preservation for these kind of relationships. But again, it can 100% work for.
Well, can you imagine though, having the skills to negotiate a successful polyamorous relationship and a successful DS relationship, and then all of a sudden you decided that you are monogamous and vanilla? Traditional relationships would be a breeze. Like, because these skills that you've had to navigate difficult things, now what are you trying to navigate? You left work at 5 and didn't get home until 6, and it's only a 15-minute drive. Where are you? Like, all those things that may be a point of argument in a traditional relationship, you're like, oh my God, really? Yeah. That is so not even a thing.
I didn't even think to get upset about that.
It never occurred to me to wonder where you were for that 45 minutes that I wasn't tracking you.
Right.
Oh, life. No, I love it. We're going to have to get more people on the show. They're fantastic. I want to bring them back on again multiple times because we could talk about specific topics with them.
Yeah. They're a wealth of knowledge for sure.
They are. Like, nobody, like, I bet if you asked them if they were experts, they would say no, because a real expert doesn't claim to be an expert, because as soon as you do, you're kind of shut down to learning, or you can be. Mm-hmm. So I doubt that they would refer to themselves, but within our community, 20 years in the lifestyle and many years as educators, like that's your PhD.
It's valuable, yeah.
I mean, compared to our world, I mean, there is no PhD program at Cornell on this topic. So what level of education is there above? We've been kink educators for years and doing this successfully for decades. So I would go ahead and say that they're experts.
Well, and experience is so much, you know, even in jobs or something, like you can have a PhD in something and not know how to do it
hands-on,
you know, like.
Like every single college graduate in the history of colleges.
The application of.
They get out of school and the employer says, okay, now I'll teach you how to do the job.
Yeah, the application of knowledge is paramount and so much more valuable than just having the ABCs in your head.
You know, I know people, I've known multiple people with PhDs in psychology,
mm-hmm.
who I have a conversation with them and they don't understand how people work. They can quote research papers and studies and psychology trends with names and dates.
Mm-hmm.
But when I talk to them and I see their dynamic in their relationship, I think, you don't even understand your partner.
Mm-hmm.
You have a PhD. Like, it doesn't actually mean anything. I think there's some value to, you know, it's quite possible that your grandma is your best marriage counselor.
Mm-hmm.
If she's successfully navigated a 60-year marriage and you admire her relationship.
Right. She's got the kind of relationship that you want.
That you want. She very well may know way better than the person with the papers on their wall. But anyways, they have the closest thing to papers in our mm-hmm. community, which is experience.
Yep.
So they have both experience and papers, known as experience. How about that? Double experience.
So tell us how your kink or poly dating is going. Tell us if you find a new app, we'd love to hear about it. Or if you have questions about what, how to make this thing work.
And we've started doing what we call DS or poly relationship coaching. And we are not experts. Mm-hmm. But because we are not experts, we are not charging for this. We want to gain the experience, not just of talking at people with the podcast, but also interacting with them, because that's how we're going to grow as educators, which is something that's important to us.
Right. And so, we learn along the way too.
So if you want to, you or your couple want to talk about these things that you're navigating, we would love to have a conversation, a one-on-one conversation with you. And
yeah, we've done a few already and they're going great.
And they're really fun. And they seem to be, so far we haven't gotten any bad feedback. We haven't steered anybody wrong, I don't think. Well, at least they haven't told us if we have.
So reach out to us on kinkbuffet.com. All of our social media contacts are linked from there. Or send us email at kinkbuffet@gmail.com. Until next time.
Bye.